Well, I too want to welcome you to South Lansing Christian Church. My name is Frank. I'm one of the ministers here, and we're just really excited you're here. I know some of you are here for the first time today. Some of you are here for the first time in a long time, and I want to welcome you back. So we're going to talk for just about 25 or 30 minutes about this new sermon series that we're starting today called Finding Your Way Back to God. And as we get started, I want to let you know that you can follow along with us. If you take your mobile device, you can use our app. We have a South Lansing Christian Church app that you can download at the Google Play Store, or you can download that at the Apple iTunes Store, and you can just follow along in the upper left-hand corner. You'll see a little icon that says YouVersion, and that will be your way to follow along with the teaching this morning. It's cold, and it's wet out. I mean, welcome to Michigan, right? I know you don't want to hear this, but we're about 6 weeks away from snow. We really are. And, yeah, there are some in every crowd, really, who like snow. I don't understand. As far as I'm concerned, snow has really only one useful purpose, and that is skiing. Anybody like to ski? Anybody? Yeah, just a handful of you. I remember the first time I went skiing, my friend Mike. I was like a baby youth minister. I'm living in Kokomo, Indiana. It's all flat there. But my friend Mike used to do this annual snow skiing thing and he put on student youth groups from all over would come to this thing. And he used to tell me, Frank, you have got to learn to ski. Skiing is amazing. It's like making your own roller coaster, right? You get to decide where the roller coaster goes. And he went on and on and on about it. So one day I decided, okay, you know what? I'm going to do this. And I loaded up a couple of vans with junior high and high school students and some adult volunteers. And we went to this amazing ski resort with these huge hills, this place called Cannonsburg, right? Yeah. I mean, you know what? They're hills. They're not mountains. But when you've never skied before, they look like mountains, okay? And so, you know, here I am, and I put on these, you know, skis, mass-manufactured 4-inch slats of wood, you know, made by someone who knows what they're doing. And I go out there, and I take the lesson. And if you know how this whole skiing works, the first time you go, I recommend you get the lesson, right? But so I'm there, and I'm getting the lesson. And the first thing they teach you to do, of course, put your skis on. And the second thing they tell you, okay, now that you have your skis on, I want you to fall down. Just fall over. Because now they're going to teach you how to take your skis off so that you can stand back up. So you fall down a lot. And so I did that. You know, I did the whole stand up, fall down thing. And then they teach you to snow plow. You know what I'm talking about? Where you put your toes together and you kind of make that piece of pie and you're going down. And so then I think, okay, I figured out how to snow plow. I got that figured out. Now we're going to go to the tow rope. Any of you ever go to the tow rope? How long did it take to have your shoulder put back in the socket? I mean, did you have to go to the hospital or did the snow bunny was he or she able to do that? Yeah, so you go to the tow rope. Well, that's a whole project in itself, figuring out how to go up the hill. You get up the hill on the tow rope, you know, you get to the top of the bunny hill and you look down, you're staring over this precipice at these little 5-year-olds just kind of going back and forth and having fun. And you're thinking, what am I doing? So, you know, okay, I managed to snow plow down the hill and I figure that out. And eventually I'm able to shush and to weave. You know, now my skis are parallel. I'm like, you know, I'm figuring it out. I'm going down the hill. And so now that I've figured out how to do the bunny slope and the tow rope, what do I want to do now? Now I have to figure out how to do the chairlift, right? I want to do the chairlift. Now here's what I've discovered at that day, and you know, this has been my experience all along. Getting on the chairlift is pretty easy. Getting off the chairlift is pretty easy too. It's called gravity. You fall off the chairlift. But the trick is to learn how to ski off the chairlift. Well, I figured that out. I figured out how to ski off the chairlift. And so now, you know, it's one thing after another. Okay, I figured out how to do this. Now I want to learn how to do that. I figured out how to do that. Now I want to learn how to do the next thing. I figured out how to do the green circle slope. You know what I'm talking about? They've got this own little color-coded chart, the color-coded chart of death that tells you how you're, you know, whether you can do this or not. So I figured out the green circle slope, and now I'm going to go to the blue square slope. And so I spend, you know, a couple hours on the blue square slope. And I've got that figured out. Now it's the end of the day. It's the end of the day. And I should have known because your legs are tired at the end of the day. I thought, you know what? a black diamond is basically like a darker square kind of turned on its side. I can do a black diamond slope. And so I did. And you know, standing at the bottom, looking up at the Black Diamond Hill is a much different perspective than standing at the top, looking down at the lodge. But nevertheless, I got on the chairlift, I went up, and now I'm at the top of the Black Diamond Slope at Canonsburg. Some of you know what I'm talking about, and you're like, seriously, Frank, Black Diamond, Canonsburg, Bunny Slope, Aspen, get it. So I'm at the top, and at some point, you just have to man up and say, I've got two ways to get down this hill, on skis or not on skis. Either way, I'm getting down the hill. So I tip my skis over the edge of the cliff, and I start going downhill. It's important to control your speed when you're going downhill, because at some point, your brain starts hearing, you know, lines from the movie Top Gun. Eject, eject, eject. And so you're going down the hill, and that's what happened. I'm hearing eject, eject. And I reached down, and I grabbed that yellow handle and turned it a half turn and pulled it. Poof, you know, the canopy flies off the jet. And I did what they call in skiing a yard sale. A yard sale, right? I yard sailed on the Black Diamond. A yard sale basically means everything must go. And that's what I did. I was spread out over a half acre. I've got a ski over there. There's a glove over there. Goggles are down here. I'm laying flat on my back with little five-year-olds going past me going, dude, you know, I'm laying on my back. And Heather, this sweet little 14-year-old girl from our youth group, she comes over and she like stops. And she's got the whole thing too. You know, she's got the cute little jacket and the furry little thing. You know, whoosh, she stops. She snowplows. She's like, Pastor Frank, are you okay? It was so humiliating. The only thing worse is when you have to, is when they have to bring the, you know, the snowmobile with the little thing, the backboard, and they drag you down the hill. I just kind of scooted the rest of the way down on my bottom. I was like ice cold by the time I got to the bottom of the hill. But here's the thing that I learned about skiing taught me that day, and I've found this true many, many times in life. I always long for something more. When I figure out how to do A, I want to do B. When I figure out how to, okay, I've acquired this skill and I've mastered this skill, but now I want to figure out how to do that one. And you know what? I still snow ski once or twice a year. It's just an exercise in mortality to remind me that, okay, you're getting older, but you can still do this. So I still do that once or twice a year, but now I figured out I can go back and forth, right? And for the most part, I can't do moguls. Joe will tell you that. Joe, we went one time and did moguls, and he was at the bottom waiting for me to, like, I look like a pachinko ball working my way down the moguls. But I still want to do more, right? I mean, I figured out how to ski, but now I look at those cool dudes on the boards, the snowboards. They're like coming down the hill and they're sliding down a rail and they're going over obstacles. Things. I long for something more. And I think this is part of human experience. Every one of us long for something more. Let me demonstrate this. If you did not long for something more, you would still be crawling instead of walking. Right? Now, you weren't aware of this. You weren't cognizant of this when it took place. But when you were an infant, you at some point lifted up your head. And then at some point you rolled over. And the adults in the room were really impressed with the fact that you could go from back to front. They're like, oh, you know, snapping pictures, right? Because you rolled over. But that wasn't enough for you. Eventually, you want to do the crawl. And first you do that little army crawl thing, you know, I'm talking about where you're just using the elbows and kind of dragging your feet behind. But eventually you're actually crawling on all fours. But that's not enough for you. Eventually you're going to stand up and you're going to toddle and eventually you're going to begin to walk. But it's not enough for you just to walk, and nobody told you you needed to do this. You figured it out on your own. You long for something more. Eventually you go from walking to running. And running is really amazing until you see someone on a bicycle, right? And then you want to be on a bike. And then you're on your bicycle and you're the coolest person in the world because you got the Schwinn or you got the Huffy and you're doing your thing, right? But then you see somebody in a car. You long for something more. It's kind of built into your DNA to long for something more. And this, not just when you're a kid, but eventually you go from, you know, wanting to experience more and experience new things to wanting to become more. It's not just enough for you and I to be where we're at. No, we want to become more. Think about it this way. You decided you wanted to join the team, right? But it wasn't enough to join the team. You wanted to really be good at whatever sport it was. You wanted to be the captain, or you wanted to be the quarterback. Maybe you joined the choir, and joining the choir was really fun, but it wasn't enough. You wanted to become the soloist in the choir. You joined the acting club, but you know, you wanted to get a part in the play. You wanted to have a speaking line. You wanted something more. You went to high school, and high school was good, but for some of you, you couldn't wait to get out of high school for the next thing. Whether it was to go into the workforce, or whether it was to go to college, you wanted something more. And then you graduated college, and then it was something else, and then it was something after that. Eventually, you know, you wanted to become independent from your parents. So for some of us, that longing that we have is expressed by wanting to experience more. For some of us, it's wanting to become more. For some of us, it's wanting to acquire more. We want more stuff. Remember your first apartment? I remember Tracy and I had this apartment one time on Delphus Street. It was so tiny, we couldn't, you know, we couldn't turn around in the same room. I had to install like this backup thing so I could just back up beep, beep, beep. So, you know, Tracy would know that, okay, get out of the way. Here he comes. We're a tiny little place, right? And we wanted something more. We couldn't wait to get out of that apartment and actually get a house. You know, some place that we could call our own. And you're probably that way too. You had a little tiny apartment. It was great. You were independent. You had your own place, but no, you want a house. Or maybe you had that 42-inch plasma TV, and it was awesome, and then you were at Best Buy, you saw the 50-inch LCD, right? Now you're like, oh, TV's not looking so good. I want something more. Or maybe you wanted the bigger house, or maybe you wanted the newer car, and then eventually you get the big house, you get the new car, and now what do you want? Now you want the recreational vehicle so you can leave the big house and the new car and go out in the woods and leave it all, right? All right? We want something more. But here's the problem with that. At the end of all of our longing, the longing for becoming, the longing for experience, the longing for acquiring things, at the end of all of our longing and our wanting, for most people, most of us end up still feeling like there must be something more. There must be something more. Here's the thing, Christianity has an answer for that longing. Has an answer for that feeling that there must be something more. Some of you believe that. Some of you said, you know what? Absolutely, Pastor Frank, I believe that there must be something more, and that something more is Jesus, and you believe that, and that's why you're here. Some of you aren't sure about that. You know, I don't know if there's something more or not, but I'm looking for something more, and maybe it's in Jesus, maybe I can find this something more here and there. I don't know, but you know, you're trying to figure it out, and I applaud you. Way to go. I'm so glad you're here. This is a safe place to ask those questions and express those doubts. Some of you are here because you got invited today and you're a nice person. You're a polite person. And so you said, well, sure, I'll come to your event. And maybe you don't even, you know, maybe when I say, hey, there's got to be something more, and that something more is Jesus, maybe you don't buy that. You don't believe that. And that's okay. I'm so glad you're here today to experience today with your friend or with your relative or with your coworker. This is a safe place for you to question and to experience and to really investigate who God is. Here is Christianity's explanation to the idea that there must be something more. Here's Christianity's reasoning behind the longing that we all feel for something more. The longing that you feel, the longing that I feel for something more was built into us by a creator who longs to draw us, his children, back to himself. God put that longing in you so that eventually you would go looking for Him and you would find your way back home. There was this guy who lived in the 17th century named Blaise Pascal. He was a child prodigy. He was absolute genius. At the age of 19, he invented the world's first mechanical calculator. Now, we all have electronic calculators, right? Pascal invented a mechanical calculator. He was like an uber nerd. He was the nerd's nerd. He wrote an entire book. You ready? He wrote an entire book about the triangle. Yeah. Yeah. Good. It's compelling stuff. And if you had geometry and you studied the triangle, you have Pascal at least to blame. He's at least to blame for part of that. But he also wrote a book about theology in which he talked about this longing that all of us kind of have built into us. This longing for something more. This unfillable void that many of us experience. And I want to share with you a couple of sentences from that book today. And I'm going to kind of walk through them because they're 17th century language. But here's what he had to say, and see if this doesn't, kind of resonate with you. He's talking about the void that we often feel. Pascal wrote this: "What else does this craving and this helplessness proclaim but that there was once in man a true happiness of which all that now remains is the empty print and trace?" In other words, he's saying the longing for happiness is evidence that there is such a thing as happiness. Think of it this way. Your feeling of hunger is evidence that there is such a thing as food. When you're hungry, you desire to be filled with food. Therefore, the actual hunger itself is evidence that there is such a thing as food. The longing for relationship with other people, maybe a husband or a wife, the longing for relationship that you and I feel is evidence that there is, in fact, such a thing as love. That's what he's saying. And he's saying that this longing for happiness that we feel is evidence that there once was inside of us true happiness, and that all that remains of that now is just sort of the trace, the print, the memory. Now here's what he says. "This," he, that's you and I, "this we try in vain to fill with everything around him, seeking in things that are not there the help he cannot find in those that are, though none can help. Since this infinite abyss can be filled only with an infinite and immutable object, in other words, by God Himself." Pascal is essentially saying that inside every person is a vacuum. He called it a God-shaped vacuum that only God Himself can fill. But here's what happens. You and I, we try to fill it with all sorts of other things, whether it's possessions or it's power or it's position, or, we try to fill that God-shaped vacuum with all these other things, and they never quite fit, because Pascal says only God can fill that void in our lives. Long before Pascal wrote these words, Jesus told a story about a man who is trying to fill some longing in his life. He told a story about a young man who experiences some of the exact same feelings that you and I feel. This idea, this feeling that there must be something more. One of Jesus' four biographers was a man named Luke. And Luke wrote down some of Jesus' stories, the stories that Jesus told, parables, he called them, because they're stories sort of with a moral or with a lesson attached. And in the 15th chapter of Luke's biography of Jesus, he tells a familiar story about someone, about a young man who had a longing that he could not fill. And we're going to show you that scripture in video right now. Let's take a look.
"There was a man who had two sons. The younger said to his father,
Father, I want right now what's coming to me.
So he divided his property between them.
A
few days later, this younger son packed all his belongings and took a trip to a distant land.
And where he wasted all his money in wild living. He had spent everything. When a bad famine spread through that whole land, soon he had nothing to
eat. He was hungry and needed money. So he went and got a job with one of the people who lived there. The man sent him to the fields to feed pigs.
He would have been glad to eat what the pigs were eating, but no one gave him a thing. Finally,
when
he came to his senses,
he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare?
And here I am starving to death. I'm going back to my father. I'll say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against God. I've sinned before you.
I am no longer worthy to be called your son.
But let me be like one of your hired workers.' So he left and he went to his father. While the son was still a long way off, he felt sorry for him.
His father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son.
So he ran to him and
arms around him and kissed him.
The son said, 'Father, I have sinned against God and have done wrong to you. I am no longer worthy to be called
your son.' I don't deserve to be called your son ever again.
But the father said to his
servant. But the father wasn't listening. He was calling to the servants, 'Quick, bring a clean set of clothes and dress him. Put the family ring on his finger and sandals on his feet.
Get the best calf and prepare it.
Bring the best calf
and celebrate.
Let's have a feast and celebrate.
This son of mine was dead, but has now come back to life.
Son of mine was dead and has returned to life. He was lost and is found.'
He was lost.
So the party
and is
began.
Found.
Lost
so they
and now
began
found.
To celebrate.
And they began to have a wonderful time."
There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. Now, if this were being told in 2015, if this story were current, if it were, you know, something happening today, you and I would probably think that that son was somewhere on the scale between, you know, mildly rude and incredibly ungrateful. We'd probably put him somewhere on a scale. In Jesus' day, though, this story is scandalous. You have to picture Jesus telling this story for the very first time in his culture. When he got to the point where the son says, "Father, give me my share of the estate," that's when the audible gasp took place in the crowd. That's when people's hands went reflexively and just covered their mouths because they could not believe what this kid was saying. You see, not only was the son expected to wait until his father's death to receive his inheritance in that culture, but it was also expected that the son would care for the father in his old age. That's just culturally what happened in Jesus' day. And so this son is saying, in effect, to his father, he says, "Give me my share of the inheritance." But what Jesus' listeners hear the young man saying is, "Father, I wish you were dead." That's the effect and intent of his words. And so when you and I hear this from the son, it's really easy for us to pile on this kid. But the reality is that maybe this kid just said what many of us often are thinking, which is there must be something more. Here's this kid and he's longing for something more. And I'm telling you, I know you have because I have too. There are times when I've longed for something more. And I'm guessing you have too. There have probably been times in your life where you're longing for something more than the job that you have. You get up, you do it every day. You go into work, you put in the hours, you come home, you're mentally exhausted. Even if it's not a physically taxing job, you're just exhausted because you hate your job, you long for something more. Maybe you long for something more than the education that you're getting right now. I mean, you're in school, you're working away, you're trying to figure it out, right? But you feel like at the end of this, you're going to hand me a degree, but really, what is that all about? And there must be something more. Maybe for you, you long for something more than the relationship that you're in right now. Whether you're dating some guy or dating some girl or you're married and you know, you're together, but you're just thinking there must be something more. Here's what I want you to understand. You and I should feel that longing. That's the truth that you're going to hear today. You and I should feel the longing for something more. Because remember what I said just a minute ago. The longing for something is evidence that that something exists. Right? If you long, if you're hungry, that's evidence that something, you know, known as food exists. The longing for something more is evidence that something more exists. And here is what I would tell you today. The longing that you and I try to overcome with possessions or position or power, that longing comes from God and can only be satisfied in Him. Too often, though, we do exactly what this son does. Verse 13, not long after that, right, it says, Dad, give me my inheritance. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant land, and squandered his wealth in wild living. He longs for something more, and so he decides, I'm going to go find it. I'm going to go figure out what that something more is. I'm going to go out. I'm going to see the world. I'm going to try to find that something more. And so Luke says he went out, he squandered his wealth in wild living. Now, we don't know exactly what he did. I mean, we're sort of left to fill in the blanks. It seems clear that he went off to some sort of wild, exotic city, you know, something like Las Vegas, or maybe like Amsterdam or Ann Arbor. He goes off in some wild, godless place, right? And I've got a bet with my wife, and in 2 weeks you might see me on this stage wearing blue and gold. So, yeah. Yeah. So the son goes, and he's living this wild, crazy life, you know, up all hours of the night, wild parties, you know, women one after the other to just satisfy all of his needs. And it doesn't take long before this guy completely blows through his inheritance. He blows through everything he has simply trying to fill this longing for something more. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. It didn't take this guy too long to figure out what so many of us have learned the hard way. He learned that his longing for love would not be filled in just one relationship after another, after another, after another. He learned that his longing for purpose wasn't satisfied in staying up all hours of the night and partying with his so-called friends. He learned that his longing for meaning wasn't found in his independence from his parents like he thought it would be. So he's got these longings for love and for meaning and for purpose, and he's tried to fill them with all of the, you know, this wild living and these experiences, and it lets him down. And so soon he begins to ask himself questions, the same kind of questions that we've asked from time to time. Things like, why didn't things turn out the way that I thought they would? He begins to ask, Where am I? What am I doing? He had in his mind that he would be, you know, at this place, at this time, this certain, but, you know, why am I here? Why do I feel so lonely? Why do I feel so broken? Why do I feel so empty? How did I end up in a place like this? Sound familiar? I think the reason it sounds so familiar to us is because we've all asked those questions at one time or another. You see, this young man's story, his story is each of our stories. Because at one time or another, we find ourselves far from God. And the reason Jesus told this story is because Jesus wanted you and he wanted me to be able to figure out how to find our way back to him. That's why we have this story, because God desperately longs for you and for me to find our way back home. We can find our way back to God. That's the reason Jesus told this story, to help you and to help me find our way back to him. And so there are a couple of very important questions that we need to ask ourselves today. And the funny thing of it is, we find ourselves asking and answering these questions over and over and over again at different periods throughout our lives. Here's the first one. When you begin to confront the longing for something more, right? You realize in your mind, you're just thinking in your heart, there just must be something more. When you begin to experience that longing, where will you go to satisfy the longing? When you have this desire for love or for meaning or for purpose, when you feel these longings, where are you going to go to satisfy that longing? Because you have two choices. You can either draw closer to God to satisfy the longing that you're feeling, or you can pull further away from God as you pursue other things, pleasure, power, possessions. Will you draw closer to God when you experience this longing for something more, something deeper, or will you pull further away from God? Today, we're beginning this new series of sermons, and that's why we've invited you to come today, because we're so excited about this series called Finding Your Way Back to God. And for the next 4 weeks today and 4 weeks more, we're going to explore how you and I can find our way back to God. Because here's the reality. Time and time again, we have wandered away from home. Time and time again, we've forgotten God. Time and time again, as people, as individuals, we've completely turned our back on God. And so whether you're for the very first time trying to figure out how to find your way back to God, or whether for the 50th time you're trying to find your way back to God, over the next 4 weeks, we're going to be exploring that topic, and we're going to learn how we can find our way back to God. And over the 5 weeks today and the next four, over those 5 weeks, we're going to experience five different awakenings. And today is just simply this awakening to longing, this understanding that there's a desire for something more that each of us feel. Just like this son who leaves his father to find out what more there must be in his life. And some of you might be thinking, hey, I'm in. Frank, you're right. I'm far from God. I need to find my way back to him. And if you're in, I hope you'll come back next week and experience another awakening and learn how you can find your way back to God. But some of you may be approaching this topic today with a healthy dose of skepticism. You're not sure what you believe. And that's okay. Because here's what I'd like for you to do this week. I'd like for you to just begin to do something that Blaise Pascal, remember him, 17th century math nerd? I'd like for you to begin to do something this week that he urged the other intellectuals in his circle of influence to do. I'd like to just ask you to begin praying a special prayer this week. Pascal asked his fellow intellectuals to wager something. In fact, it became known as Pascal's wager. Pascal said to his fellow geniuses, here's what I want you to do. Make a bet, an intellectual bet. Make a bet that there is a God and that he loves you. That's what he told his fellow intellectuals. He said, make a bet that there is a God and that he loves you. He says, if you're right, you've gained everything. And if you're wrong, you've lost nothing. That's Pascal's wager. That's what I'm going to ask you to do this week. I'm going to ask you to make a bet that there is a God and that that God loves you. And you know what? If you're right, you've gained everything. And if you're wrong, you've lost nothing. And here's how that wager is going to look for you and me this week. For the next 30 days, for the next month, while we're in this series of sermons, I'd like to ask you to wager a prayer. For 30 days, I would like you to simply pray, God, if you are real, make yourself real to me. That's what I'm asking you to do. You've got nothing to lose. You've got everything to gain. For the next 30 days, would you just pray along with me, God, if you are real, make yourself real to me. We're gonna share in a meal together. You know, sometimes you've heard it called communion. Maybe you've heard it called the Lord's Supper. Maybe the Eucharist, where we eat some bread and drink some juice that reminds us that Jesus was in fact real, that he was a real man, that he was God come to earth, that he lived a sinless life and died on a cross to pay the penalty for our sins. And if you're new to faith, that might not make a lot of sense to you, and that's okay. We can talk about that some other time. But this meal reminds us just how much God longs for us to come back to him. That God wanted to make a way for us to come back home, that we can find our way back to God. And so this meal reminds us not just of Jesus' death, but also his resurrection. That Jesus died for us, but now he was raised from the dead, and now he lives for us. And if you are a believer in Jesus, we just invite you to share in this meal with us. You don't have to have a membership card, right? If you're part of God's family, we want to invite you to enjoy this meal with us as along with our family. And here's how we do that here at South. Wally leads us in some singing, and we'll all stand and we'll sing together. And you'll have the opportunity at any point during the rest of this gathering to come to one of these six tables throughout this room and to share in this meal, to eat a little bit of bread, reminding of us of Jesus' broken body, to drink a little bit of juice, reminding us of his blood that was spilled for us on the cross. You can come by yourself, you can come with your family, you can come with your friends. If you came here with a friend today and you want to share in this meal with them, we invite you to do so. If you're not able to get up out of your seat, that's okay. Just kind of wave your hand. One of our ushers will come and they'll bring this meal to you. We believe that God has made a way for us to find our way back to him. And that way is Jesus. As you are milling about the room and sharing in this meal, you'll see some people in a blue lanyard. Those are prayer leaders and elders from our church. We'd love to pray with you. If you're praying for the first time today, God, if you are real, make yourself real to me. We'd love to pray that prayer along with you. We'd love to hear your story and get to know a little bit more about you. This is a place and a time where we get the opportunity to encounter Jesus today. So let's stand and pray together as we do so. Father, I thank you for finding us when we are lost. Thank you for pursuing us. Thank you for making a way for us to come back to you, to find our way back home. Father, if you are real, make yourself real to us in this moment, in this place, and throughout this entire month, as we pray this prayer in faith. In Jesus' name we pray.